So it would seem that a $100 bill, a $20 bill, and a $1 bill all met up at the shredder at the end of their lives. Now, the $100 bill said, "I have seen the whole world during my lifetime. Why, I've even been on cruises to the Caribbean, safaris in Africa, and even vacations in Europe." Well, the $20 bill said, "You know, I haven't done quite as much as you have, but I have been to Atlantic City and Disneyland and Starbucks." So then they both turned to the $1 bill and asked, "How about you?" Well, not wanting to be outdone, the $1 bill said, "I've seen the whole country too. I've been from one church to another church to another church to a..." To which then the $100 bill then asked, "What's a church?" Well, grace, mercy, and peace be with all of you here this day from our triune God. Have you ever wondered where we have got that expression, "my two cents," or maybe the longer version, "put in my own two cents"? When you think about it, it's a rather odd expression, isn't it? And one that kind of maybe even belittles our own personal opinion before we even share it. Putting in your own two cents doesn't seem to make much sense these days, especially when we live in a world where anything valued, say, under $1,000 is often viewed as nothing more than just petty cash. And yet, just 2 cents did have a very serious life-changing value back in the first century, as is reflected here in this morning's gospel reading that we have from Mark. Small gifts, we learn, can make a huge difference, both for the giver as well as for the receiver. And in today's gospel reading, it's all again about that intersection between religious life and public life. In the first part of this story that we have this morning, the focus is on having an established religious life. Now, we might say that the light that Jesus chooses here to shine on this reality gives off a rather nasty kind of glare. The scribes, whom Jesus has been observing, were classic examples of those who had nothing more than a shallow spirituality. They were devoted to deep pockets, but not necessarily to sacrificial giving. They loved being in the limelight, but not helping to lift the load of daily life for others. And as we see, Jesus condemns here the scribes for their haughty spirit and their superior attitude. They display their piety through the parades that they do of wearing fancy clothes and saying long prayers. They wear these really long fringes on their prayer shawls, which is the equivalent, we might say, of carrying around a Hermes handbag or a Prada scarf. And they make a point of offering really lengthy prayers in very public settings in order to affirm their place of good standing in the hierarchy of divine acceptance. But you might be thinking at this point, wait a minute. If this is true, then what was Jesus doing hanging around with these so-called movers and shakers who were out there strutting their stuff and hawking their wares? What's Jesus doing hanging out at the religious, at the Jerusalem mall? You know, it almost seems as though he somehow has become one of those mall rats himself. You know, the people who go to the mall and just watch other people scope out the latest fads and fashions that are happening. However, keep in mind that back in Jesus' time, observant Jews of Jerusalem all went to the temple. And therefore, Jesus went to the temple as well. He worshiped there, he prayed there, he obeyed the observed requirements that were imposed by the Torah. But back in Jesus' time, Jerusalem, that Jerusalem temple had also become the equivalent of what we might look at as a shopping mall today. Now, what might be surprising to us is that the Talmudic law had always prohibited the use of that consecrated temple space for any kind of commercial purposes, which included the court of the Gentiles, which is the place where Jesus was seated there with his disciples. Now, there were such spaces that were dedicated for commercial purposes near the temple, and this happened to be one of them, just adjacent, by the way, to the ritual immersion pools inside the temple. And as we all know, money trumps just about everything these days, even sacred spaces. And so commercialism had slowly been creeping its way into the temple itself. The temple had become not a sacred space or place to meet God, but rather the place where people went to meet each other and the place where they went to buy things. It was the place where deals were made. It was the place where you kind of hung out in order to see your friends as well as your enemies and everybody in between. Now, back in the first century, that part of the temple in Jerusalem was Main Street. It was the local mall, the upscale flea market, the internet chat room, and the hot Twitter account, all kind of rolled up together in one. It was where you had to be if you wanted to be anyone. Now, just to be clear, Jesus wasn't hanging out in the cool places in that temple. In fact, Jesus hung out at the most uncool of places in the temple. Jesus hung out with his disciples at that outermost court area of the temple. It was the courtyard where even women would have been allowed to come and be present. It was called the court of the Gentiles or the court of women. It was also the place where the temple treasury was located, where people would come then and make their sacrificial offerings to God. And because the temple was the place to go, this widow had also journeyed there to make her small offering. And in fact, this part of the temple was the only place where she would have been allowed to go. There in this open courtyard with its giant money receptacles lining up on one side, filled with the coins of those who frequented the temple. Her life might not have been perfect, but the temple even offered her a sacred space and a social place to exercise her religious duties. Now, when Jesus traveled to Jerusalem, he would always make his way to the temple. Being male, as well as being an observant Jew, and also a learned rabbi, he would have been allowed into all of those inner courts of the temple, into those areas that were reserved for special people like himself. And yet Jesus chose here instead to sit in the cheap seats. He hung out, in other words, with the common folks. He even risked the scandal of talking to women. So as Jesus and his disciples were seated there, sort of people watching, this widow had entered the courtyard and had given her offering to the temple treasury. There was no fanfare, no fuss, No big deal being made about this, but Jesus nevertheless noticed. And in the treasury / woman's court, there were all sorts of collection stations for various kinds of temple needs. In fact, within the woman's court, there would have at that time been 13 different collection bins, all beautiful golden trumpet-shaped feeders to kind of funnel in the donations required then to keep the various things at the temple going. These 13 different collection bins were each assigned to a specific mission of the temple. And the first two in that line were assigned to receive the most minimal donations for those most basic sacrifices that were required by Jewish law. The rest of the bins then required more money if you wanted to give in those. And they were deemed more significant as well and more elaborate in their missions. Therefore, the bureaucracy of the temple quite literally sucked the life blood of the sacrificial system back in the first century. And you probably didn't even have any special powers of perception to also know who was at the temple giving what amount. So this devout widow would have lined up at one of those first two of those collection boxes there, where only the minimum offering went. But Jesus, who was watching it all with a divine eye and listening with a divine ear, heard that clank of those two coins, and to him they sounded like two cymbals clashing in eternity. Now, I think that we can find at least three major takeaways from this morning's gospel lesson. And the first takeaway is this, that Jesus spent the majority of his time with people who would have been deemed to be not worthy of his time. You know, and over a century of historic Christian scholarship, there are basically two things that I think just about every scholar can agree upon. And first, it is that Jesus' message revolved around the coming of God's kingdom, although there certainly was a widespread disagreement on what that actually meant. And the second, the essence of the kingdom living is found in the practice of open table fellowship, with Jesus sitting down and eating and talking with unacceptable companions. In other words, Jesus hung out with sinners and tax collectors. So I'm going to invite you to do something we don't normally invite you to do in church. If you have your cell phone with you this morning, go ahead and pull it out. Just for a second. We're not going to ask you to make a call or anything like that. Okay. But I want you to look on your cell phone, if you've got it with you. I want you to check out the list of text messages that you have sent. All right? Check out maybe the last 20 or so of them. All right? How many of them were sent to people who aren't already followers of Jesus? Look at those names. How many of your phone calls were connecting with someone who was perhaps more like that widow in today's story? And when was the last time that you actually sat down at dinner with a person who was deemed as not worthy of your time? You know, the third takeaway I found is this, that Jesus was all about two or three. Not about 200 or 300 or 2,000 or 3,000, but two or three. Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Jesus was not into big numbers. Jesus was into narratives. Jesus turned the little, the not that much, into the large. Jesus turned the little into the lasting and to the significant. So look around you here this morning. In the economy of God's grace, Jesus can take your little your two mites, your five pebbles or two fish or five loaves, and will bless them into endless greatness. Therefore, put your little into God's hands, and then watch those rivers of blessings flow large and free. Take your little offering that you give to God and turn it into a prayer. Or place that prayer then into God's hands and watch what happens then. God takes, you see, the little and the nothing that we have and is able to lift it up. Satan, on the other hand, is always more interested in taking the large and the gifted and then bringing that all down. The great giftedness can be a hindrance, I think, to some, especially when it leads to a self-sufficiency that resents and resists a dependency upon God. So it's not great numbers or great gifts that always win. It's the yielding of the little into God's hands and God's control that can often make the biggest waves. Amen.